This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Does e-commerce work for motorbikes? That's the question we're going to be tackling today. iMotorbike is Southeast Asia's pioneering e-commerce platform for buying and selling pre-loved motorbikes. And they market themselves as a fast, secure and hassle-free online experience along with a bunch of other key features in the bid to make this a one-stop shop for pre-loved motorbike ecosystem. After a solid 2022, they're looking to grow sales 8 times to hit 20 million US dollars in revenue in 2023. Today on Open for Business, I speak with Gil Carmo, the founder and CEO of iMotorbike, to discuss how they're going to achieve this ambitious goal along with the journey so far. Gil, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show, Gil. I think it's important to start off with setting some context because there are many flavors of e-commerce or marketplace businesses. And while you did start as a classifieds portal, you've pivoted over to the e-commerce business. As it currently stands, let me know if iMotorbike acts more like, you know, a marketplace or platform like Shopee or Carousel, or are you in the business of buying bikes and then selling them? As in, like, you buy them from consumers and then you sell them to consumers.
Yeah, that's correct. We're more on the, definitely on the later side. We buy the motorbikes from consumers, and then we sell them back to the end consumer as well.
Right. So essentially, here you are holding that inventory, right? If I am a seller of a bike, I go to iMotorbike, I sell the bike to you. You then hold it, you inspect it, and then you sell it to someone else.
That's correct. So the full journey is we basically have consumers that want to sell their motorbikes. So they would find us online, try our website. They'll submit their inquiry that they're looking at selling their motorcycles. We then would reach out to them, get a pre-qualification of what bike are they looking at selling, the historicals of the motorbike, and understanding the full detail of the connection of the bike and the seller, and then getting them invited to our inspection centers where we'll have our own in-house mechanics going through the motorbikes. Usually it's a process that takes at maximum 20 minutes where we do 170 points of inspection on these motorbikes. We build a report on it, and then we drop a contracted agreement with the seller where once price agreed and all is done, we purchase the motorbike on the spot. We wire the money of the motorbike to the seller. We change the motorbike name to our company name, and off he goes. So usually the process of buying a motorbike from the consumer takes about 20 to 30 minutes at maximum. And then that bike is basically refurbished, minimum refurbishment in-house, mainly taking care of the safety side of it. We look at the tires, the brakes, the oil, spark plugs, and all that is related. Guarantee that the bike looks nice as well. we make sure that the bike then goes live to our website, where we expose it to all the consumers in the market. And that's where we get inquiries as well from potential buyers. So they reach out by seeing the bikes that are live. And then our sales team interacts with them, inviting them to come and see the bike. What happens is usually about 2% of our consumers pay the motorbike up front in full, and we deliver straight to their house. And then about other 30% pay a deposit to secure the bike before they visit and test ride the motorbikes. And the remaining ones just literally come to our showrooms. They test ride the motorbikes and purchase the motorbike on the spot. It's a very easy process as well.
Right. So you are seeing people just buy it online again, deliver to the house.
Yes, that all also happens.
How are the bikes delivered to the house? That's my curiosity here.
So basically, we place them in our towing trucks, and we deliver to straight to their houses.
Does that add an element of like there's a certain radius that you can deliver to, because if you're fulfilling that yourself?
Well, we went all the way down to shipping bikes to MIDI, right? So basically, it's a countrywide thing, and the same goes to Vietnam. So we ship to any corner of the market.
Now, your inspection centers, there are around 170 of them right now?
No. So right now, we're a lot leaner. So we have about 6 locations, both markets, Malaysia and Vietnam. But we are expanding quite aggressively in the next coming months.
Okay. And when you take, so right now you're seeing the buying side of the journey, where you are buying, or the seller side, is that a relatively offline journey because they have to come to the inspection center?
Yeah, so definitely one thing is guaranteed on the supply side for us, right? Acquiring supply, acquiring the motorbikes requires having our mechanics going through the vehicles thoroughly, right? We need to guarantee that the 170 points of our inspection report are seen through in much detail to guarantee that we know what we're buying. And that's where we start basically collecting the data of that vehicle, right? And the historical of the vehicle. And that starts building in our database.
Now, let's take a look at the market itself, or actually the rationale for entering this market. While possibly quite deep, there are a lot of motorcycles in Southeast Asia. The pre-loved motorbike market looks to be quite a niche and narrow one. And I know founders like to say that there are riches in niches. That said, that might not be as, let's say, as apt or relevant to the e-commerce market, where scale and transactions are really key, scale and volume, essentially. So tell me a little bit about why you decided to ride into the used motorcycle space, first as a classified business and now as an e-commerce platform.
Yeah, look, it's a great question. I appreciate it. I you know, what is very clear is about 85% of the households in entire Southeast Asia markets own motorcycles. And that's only true for this vehicle specifically, right? And that comes with a lot of reasonings, right? At first, economical state of each market, GDP per capita is basically the weather forgiveness as well. I would say in Southeast Asia, it's just super forgiving to ride a motorbike. Infrastructure capabilities and whatnot, right? So, and then you look at the whole scope of numbers as compared to any other vehicle in Southeast Asia, and definitely motorbikes only next to cars, right? It comes 7x bigger in terms of total registered vehicles, right? Mm-hmm. So we're looking at a full scope South Asia, about 550 million registered units. In Southeast Asia, close to 250 million. And these numbers are also actively growing in every single market, right? So we don't foresee in the next 10, 15 years that to change. Infrastructures are not changing as fast as, you know, potentially would make an impact on this numbers of growth in terms of motorbikes. And obviously, there's always the next emerging market that is at the stage of growing that side of the vehicle growth. So it just became very natural to us seeing that there's this huge amount of motorbikes and there's no digitalization whatsoever of this vehicle transactions, that we needed to be there, right? And that's what we did. And then started as classifieds, as you said, really well, because we thought at that time was the best way of connecting people online. But then, you know, as we evolved in business, we were obviously very, very, very excited about the problem we were solving, and discovered there was a far greater problem, which was the transaction itself, the trust in the transaction itself, not just connecting people. So that's what made us go deeper in 2021, becoming actually the company that buys the motorbikes and sells them rather than just connecting the buyers and sellers. So we saw there was a far greater problem to solve, and we could add value because of our knowledge and capabilities.
So moving from classifieds to e-commerce, was that part of the plan or was that a pivot?
It was definitely a discovery, right? So we as I mentioned, we were in the classifieds area, and we saw there was a problem that we were solving, but it was just not covering up the real problem, which was, you know, that trust and clarity of buying a product that is you know, it has such a heavy weight in the household income across Southeast Asia, right? Buying a motorbike on average takes 7 months of salary out of an average person in Southeast Asia. So that's not a purchase that you take lightweighted. And obviously, 7 out of 10 are bought through financing. And that makes us know that it takes 3 to 5 years to pay a motorbike in general. And for that reason, we understood that it was super important to build trust on the transaction itself. As you know, there's so many scams happening out there in the secondhand market, whatever it is. and motorbikes obviously carrying so much importance in the household income and you know, in multiple ways, not just what they spend on buying the motorbike, but also on what the motorbike represents. It represents the taking the kids to school. It represents bringing the bread home, right? And sometimes it's utilized for a second job as a ride hailer or whatnot. So it's just really important to bring that trust, and that's what we're doing.
Now, that trust is one of the key points that you've noted, I think, in a previous article, I think, with Technoid, about the pain points in the system. There are reliability issues, transparency issues, market fragmentation, and the time-consuming nature of wanting to buy and sell your bike. What was it about these pain points that you decided that you needed to... I mean, you've illustrated a little bit there. How are you addressing these pain points is the more... specific question.
Yeah, let me maybe go through the pain points first, mm-hmm. and then break it down. So the pain points are very clear that it's you never know who's selling on the C2C market out there, right? So you can get scammed by anyone that posts an online something, right? On any classified listing platform out there. And then you have the problem of, you know, not getting the bike or not getting your money back of some deposit that you paid. And then there's always the kilometer change, right? In the motorbikes and in the vehicle industry, that's very common. So that it misleads you to think that the motorbike has X amount of kilometers, which it doesn't tally with the truth. And then the mechanical changes that happen in a vehicle, you know, as you may imagine, more than 90% of the people that are buying a motorbike, they're not well-versed. They're not mechanics, right? They just need the motorbike. So they won't fully comprehend or understand if something has been changed in a motorbike. And then obviously is just how fragmented it is, how hard it is to find whatever you want, and understanding the price points and all these things. And then down to more complex countries where just the document processing and understanding if the motorbike is legal or not, it becomes really complex. In Malaysia, fair to say that it's a very developed market, that you have a lot more clarity in that front. But getting through the process of changing ownership and whatnot can be troublesome for some people still in Malaysia. But I'd say most of the other markets is just fairly complex. So that's where we come in. As I mentioned, we try to make so seamless and fast, secure, and easy to understand. So we take care of all the paperwork. We guarantee that we do the 170 points of inspection, guarantee that whatever the bike has and is fully declared and showed to whoever wants to buy the motorbike afterwards. And then when you're buying the motorbike as well, we make it, you know, very clear that we give you 6 days return policy where you're fully entitled to get 100% of your money back in a guaranteed. If just the bike doesn't suit your needs, right? You're riding a motorbike for the first time that is a different shape or a different power level that you don't feel comfortable, you're always welcome to come and trade it. And then you have a 6 months warranty that will also be there, walking the talk, protecting any problem that you'll have, obviously within the TNCs, but guarantee that you feel safe on whatever interaction that you have on purchasing a motorbike from us.
Gil, we've got a lot more to get into. Up next, we're going to get into what was it that you learned at Shopee and Lazada, at ShopBack and Lazada, that informed your decision to go into this space, as well as how you're going to achieve that $20 million in annual revenue this year. I've been speaking to Gil Carmo, the founder and CEO of the e-commerce platform iMotorbike. I'm Roshan Karnason. Keep it here to BFM 89.9.
Business-filled minds, BFM 89.9.
Good morning and welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Karnason, and this morning I'm speaking with Gil Carmo, the founder and CEO of e-commerce platform iMotorbike. Gil, earlier we set the story of how of why you've entered this space, and really it seems to address a bunch of the pain points, which includes transparency in the buying and selling of pre-loved motorbikes. Now, when we take a look at you yourself here. Now, iMotorbike is just over 6 years old, six and a half, if I'm not mistaken. Now, before starting iMotorbike, you spent around 2 years in e-commerce and online shopping with Lazada, then with ShopBack. A lot of your experience before that seems to be more on the sales and business development side of things. So tell me about how significantly your experience at ShopBack and Lazada informed your decision to start and build iMotorbike. Because again, there are many different ways you could have gone into e-commerce or other businesses as well. why e-commerce, why classifieds, why motorbikes?
Thanks. One thing is very clear. I've always been quite a big petrol head, and I got a very early passion for the internet as well, understanding the power of it and how it connects people out of nowhere. So I think iMotorbike is kind of a culmination of two different passions in one, and I believe life is made for that. And since you spend so much time working, you'd rather be doing something that you're really passionate about, because that makes things a lot easier. Obviously, how I reached to the point of iMotorbike, it comes with the connection of so many different experience getting together, right? But I guess opening a company is pretty similar to having a kit. You're never ready. So you just need to take the leap of faith at a certain point. And there's a lot of learnings that will come from it regardless.
Well, what was it about your time at the e-commerce and online shopping space? Was there anything that you learned that was instrumental? Because yes, you're right. Sometimes you're never really ready. But there are things you can do to learn and prepare. What was it that you learned?
Yeah, look, definitely one thing was very clear. Lazada was a very large, well-funded company when I joined them, still in the early days still. But it helped me to get a sense of how this thing of a website works on the back end, right? Mm-hmm. And in a large scale with a lot of money to put everywhere. And then Shopback gave me a bit of the opposite. Right now, Shopback is obviously a huge company, super successful, great founders. But when I joined them, they were fairly small still. Malaysia was their first company outside of Singapore. And that gave me the exact opposite, was how a small website works on the back end. Mm-hmm. So, and that's exactly the journey that I wanted before I opened my own. I wanted to understand how does this all work, right? Of having a website as a product and then building it all on the back end. And definitely there was multiple different learnings, obviously two different business model, even though Shopback and Lazada are partners. There was a lot of learnings on the operation side, on the marketing side, on the commercial side, on the C-level side, and all those things that was great. There was not one specific learning. I think there's the whole package.
Yeah, so you didn't just jump into the space. Obviously, you got a bit of a taste for it before you jumped into it. Now, speaking of experience, your co-founder, Charmaine Louis, only formally joined you in 2020. It's important that co-founders complement each other and cover each other's weaknesses, which is easier said than done when you're building a business. Oftentimes you can compare finding a co-founder like marriage, and divorce rates are around 50%. So that's some color in that situation. Talk to us about what Charmaine brings to the table as a co-founder and how she's played into the growth story here at iMotorbike.
Yeah, so we met whilst working at Shopback, right? She was their first employee from Malaysia. Definitely, at the beginning was we are so different that when we met was a bit of a shock for both. But after 1 month of working together, we discovered we do make magic together, right? And that just built us to do incredible stuff at Shopback. And then she continued pursuing her time there. And then I went to venture into iMotorbike then. And then, but we kept a friendship. We knew already we work really, really well together. And then when she got to a point of questioning her time, where she's going to go next. And obviously, I was aware of it. We got in touch, we spoke, and it just made a lot of sense. And obviously, as I mentioned earlier, we're really, really different. We went down to do a personality test with one of our investors, asking that. They do that for every company. And we fill up exact opposite spectrum of the diagram that is built post-mortem of that test. So that's fun. And obviously, She covers all the factors that I would miss, and I would do the opposite in terms of what she can do. But definitely she's really good on what she does. She's in charge of marketing, expansion, growth, and obviously I touch a lot of things like she does, in the sense of it's really complementary. But I would say after it's done and it happened, obviously we know each other for many, many years. It's easy, but I wouldn't say for any founder out there, it's a fairly easy thing to find someone that compliments you off the bat.
Very quickly, Gil, we've got about a minute till we got to go into the news bulletin. Just one last question on the product itself here. Right now, your primary business is the buying and selling of pre-loved motorbikes, but you do offer complimentary services here. You help with financing, insurance, road tax, that sort of thing. Give us the scope here of the complimentary services.
Yeah. So every motorcycle that is bought from us is enabled to have financing, insurance, extended warranty coverage, and roadside assistance, and so on. So we really are 360 a place where any problem you face with your motorbike, even the maintenance afterwards, is something we already started A-B testing, and we will venture into fully support the customer in their journey with the motorbike.
Gil, we got a lot more to talk about. Up next, of course, we're going to talk about the growth story. You want to hit 20 million in annual sales this year. That's 8 times more than last year. All that and more after the news bulletin, which is coming up right after this. I'm Roshan Kernison. This is Open for Business, and you're listening to BFM 89.9.
Bribe-free ministers? BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kunnison. This morning, I'm speaking with Gil Carmo, founder and CEO of e-commerce platform iMotorbike. iMotorbike is Southeast Asia's pioneering e-commerce platform for buying and selling pre-loved motorbikes. Now, Gil, we've talked about you. We've talked about the business. I think now it's time to get down to the dollars and cents, because as much as we like talking about the founders and the concept of a business, it's important that it makes sense over the longer term, that it's viable. Now, iMotorbike made $2.5 million in revenue in 2022, over 2,000 transactions. How much growth does this indicate from 2021?
It's essentially a 10x growth, right, from what we did in 21. But, fair to say that 21 is when we pivoted the business in July. That's mm-hmm. when we start doing our first trade. And then we took it out from there.
So 2021 was the first year of the pivoted business. You did about $250,000 in revenue. 2022, $2.5 million. This year, you're aiming for $20 million. We'll get into that in a little bit. What were the key customer acquisition channels that supported your growth in 2022?
So I think we're obviously a digital first. We get all our customers, and we had the legacy of classifieds as well. So we were fairly well known in terms of motorbike space, in terms of the classified side that just peel off to this business model, which was fairly natural. There's a lot of organic pull that we have from the search engines, and then naturally all the social media interaction and that we have out there. Yep.
Now, you've got, I think, 6 locations with inspection centers. How material are the inspection centers to your customer acquisition and growth?
So it's still digital first. They would find us online first and then go down to the inspection centers or showrooms.
While inspection centers do provide assurance, right, I think it's important that people understand, that have a sense of, like, when they're buying pre-loved bikes, that, you're buying a something with that's been stamped approval, and you've also got that 6-month warranty there. But the thing is, running inspection centers comes at a cost, I would presume. Does this add a scale, a bottleneck to the scalability of the business? How do you manage this then? How are you going to factor this into your growth?
Yeah, definitely. There's cost of operation, retail, contract, and then you have the staff, management, all of that. So, but we've seen it in a different way. We found ways of making it a little bit less costly for us. And so we're now partnering with a very large retailer across Malaysia, looking at the same partnership for Vietnam or a similar one, where we basically are going to have a 6x6 booth across their locations, super high traffic of motorbike riders, where we're going to be literally inspecting the motorbikes on the spot, getting the bikes purchased, so that's the way we see that we're going to scale extremely lean in terms of cost, far greater than us, getting into contracts of retail or renovations and whatnot. Yep.
The inspection centers is actually essentially acting as that physical presence for iMotorbike. And speaking from personal experience, I was once buying pet insurance. Yes, I'm that kind of person. I was buying pet insurance, and while I was shopping for it for months on end, I was converted at a bazaar where they were present. How do you see a lot of that happening at your inspection centers?
You know, what I believe in is motorbikes is still very physical. People naturally research online. So that's the natural behavior. They research online and then they come down to touch wood, right? So they, but that goes a lot more on the buying the motorbike, right? When it comes to sell, there's an inevitable need of the transaction, the physical good, right? So they inevitably need to come to our inspection centers. And we will not purchase any motorbike without running through the inspection on our mechanic side. So it's just, it's just the flow of things, I would say.
So let's get into the revenue again. $2.5 million last year. That's around that's over 10 million ringgit in revenue. Could you give us a sense of the revenue breakdown by the revenue streams that you have? I presume e-commerce would be the main, or if not all, of that revenue?
So yeah, a great majority of the revenue is really tied to the trade of the motorbikes itself. So the bikes being sold.
The spread that you get from the buying and the selling of
that.
Yes,
that's correct.
Just like back of the envelope math here, $2.5 million over 2,000 transactions in 2022 roughly translates to a spread of around $1,250, roughly around 5,000 ringgit per transaction. How are you able to maintain that, right? Because that's a healthy margin to be making off buying and selling bikes.
Right. Look, I think the margins we do are still capable of enhance and doing really good. And I think it's a business that is very, very liquid. There's a lot of motorbikes out there. There's a lot of need of support in this trade. And it's a multi-market need. And what we do is basically being super customer obsessed, right? And guarantee that the experience is seamless. And you know, even when mistakes happen, we're there, which is just what the customer needs, right? To guarantee that you know, mindset and the business itself, it's just super sustainable.
Now, of course, this spread is on average, right? On aggregate. And there are going to be bikes that you make a bigger spread on. I'm sure there are bikes that you make a loss on. On average, what are the ticket sizes of the deals that you see? How often are you, what is the average price of the bike that you're buying versus the bike that you're selling?
So we're making on average roughly a 7% margin, right?
Okay.
I think we're looking at you know, a lot of speed in trade rather than, you know, squeezing a lot of money out of each motorbike. We want to guarantee that the consumers get the most amount of the experience and feel that we are the partner to stick with rather than, you know, squeezing every transaction. Yeah,
I'll ask a little bit more about that margin later and the viability of the business in a few minutes. But right now, you told multiple outlets that you're aiming for $20 million by the end of the year. That's 8x sales growth. And I think in one of the interviews you added that this was a conservative target, showing that you guys are really bullish this year. How did you come to this target?
You know, it's not really magic. It's down to how much volume of motorbikes are we able to absorb that will be sold, right? And that amounts to the total revenue generated based on the bikes we sell and the customers pay that amount to us. So it's a function of how much volume of capital we can put into motorbikes, then trade, because the ceiling of volume of bikes that are traded out there, it's humongous, right? So the 20 million is a very short, very small pie of the total pie out there.
So that roughly translates to what, 8,000 transactions this year of motorbikes?
That's correct.
Which, when you put the number out there, sounds very realistic. And you are able to scale that. So when you buy bikes, obviously it's within country, right? You're not taking bikes from Malaysia and sending them to Vietnam.
Correct.
Of those 8,000, where's the growth going to come from? Is it going to be split equally amongst Vietnam or Malaysia? Or presuming that Vietnam is a bigger market, I would presume it skews there slightly.
So Malaysia now is our largest market. And that comes with the function that when we start trading, Vietnam was still deep in lockdown for the first 5-6 months, which obviously delayed the entire process of growing Vietnam. And as you said, Vietnam is humongous. There's about 70 million registered motorbikes there as compared with the 16 million registered in Malaysia. We foresee we'll put similar efforts in both, since it's still very, very small as compared with the total capability of the market.
So obviously, when you're looking at increasing sales, there are a few ways to do it, right? You can raise prices, you can acquire new customers, you can upsell current customers. Given that you're currently a trading business, it's also about how much spread you can make. But right now, you've said you're focusing on the volume. Now, to acquire more customers, what are the primary strategies going forward? And I'd like to start with the geographic expansion, right? Because that could be an interesting take on to acquire new customers. What are the new markets in Malaysia that you can expand to, and the additional foreign markets?
So I wouldn't say, you know, we for customer acquisition, our main focus is really excelling at every interaction with the customers. But definitely the expansion is powerful, right? This inspection center expansion in market will make us a lot closer to a lot of other consumers that we're not reaching today, because we're essentially Kuala Lumpur and Ho Chi Minh. So as we expand our inspection center capability, will naturally make us a lot easier to absorb bikes from the rest of the country, and will make us a lot closer to them to sell the bikes to them as well. So that's definitely a way to look at things. So we'll be opening inspection centers in Seremban and Penang and so forth. So in several different places. But then when it comes to other markets, definitely Malaysia and Vietnam is where we're going to be doubling down now. There's a potential look at, obviously, the remaining of Southeast Asia. Indonesia is a huge market. Thailand is fairly big as well. So Philippines as well. So all this part.
Do you have timelines for those markets to enter those markets?
We do not.
So right now, primary focus being still Malaysia and Vietnam.
Correct.
So for every new location that you open, do you have models for how incremental that would be for your revenue?
Fundamentally, we're still scratching surface in any market that we're in, right? Just look at Malaysia itself. 16 million motorbikes exist registered. It's fairly easy to assume that the 2,000 motorbikes that we traded last year are still fairly small to the total scope of bikes that are traded. So I would say, you know, we're still far from getting to those limits and that having an impact.
In your bid to grow revenue, I presume, will you be also doing more aggressive marketing, whether in the current or the new markets?
I think we're always looking at doing marketing efficiently and getting our word out and what we do to the consumers as much as possible.
Because you got to keep in mind your 7% margins as well, right? The unit economics need to work.
So, correct. So we're very healthy in terms of unit economics. I think what matters here is also guarantee that we're able to support the customers, because every person that we reach out telling them that we would buy the motorbike from them, we need to cope with it as well, right?
Gil, we got more to talk about, including whether partnerships are a way forward for iMotorbike, as well as a look at funding. I've been speaking with Gil Carmo, the founder and CEO of e-commerce platform iMotorbike. You're listening to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Keep it here to BFM.
Binge-friendly movies. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to Open for Business. I'm Roshan Kanesan, and this morning I've been speaking with Gil Carmo, the founder and CEO of e-commerce platform iMotorbike. So, Gil, we were talking a little earlier about your revenue growth and how you're going to achieve those revenue numbers. Talked a little bit about marketing, talked a bit about your expansion plans into other markets. Now, another way to grow your customer base or increase your revenue is through partnerships. It's a great way to capture a larger market share and to get more customers. What kind of partnerships will iMotorbike be pursuing this year to support your growth? You noted earlier something about inspection centers. Aside that, are there other partnerships that you're looking to work on?
Yeah, most definitely. So I think, you know, we're constantly on the lookout to partner with companies that can provide us value with, and as well, you know, it's a mutual value add. And obviously, there's a lot to it, right? When it comes to the inspection side, the maintenance side, there's a lot of parts supply OEMs and whatnot. When it comes to the multi-location, like we explored the inspection sensor, but as well, showrooms and whatnot. So we're always looking at new partners. And when it comes with financing, insurance, extended warranties, roadside assistance, everything that we touch, we're looking at getting other companies that, you know, we can add value and they can add value to us to partner with.
Now, is there anything else that we haven't covered that is essential to your growth plans? Because we've touched on partnerships, marketing, new markets. Is there anything else that you're working on in order to achieve those higher transaction numbers?
You know, what we do is fairly simple. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't say that we touch and we rush quite a bit. I'd say it is really down to the concept of us mm-hmm. being able to absorb a lot of this volumes of motorbikes in great condition and deliver it back to the consumers and to achieve the growth numbers that we're proposing ourselves to.
Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to platforms, while revenue is great, customer acquisition cost is always going to be a key metric that you keep an eye on. You made $2.5 million in revenue last year. I think you've raised $1.6 million over 7 rounds, according to data from Crunchbase. Talk to us about how much you spent on customer acquisition last year. I know you're making 7% margin. You noted that earlier, but customer acquisition is a subset of that, right?
Yeah, so it's a fifth of our gross margin, basically, mm-hmm. our CAC, right? We keep it as lean as possible and efficient.
And how does that compare versus the estimated lifetime value of the customers, right? Because you're assuming that, you know, customers now are going to be repeat buyers in the future. So how do those numbers kind of compare?
So there's multiple angles on that. So there's renewal of insurance, there's maintenance that they necessarily go through. And as you may know, motorbikes do a lot more maintenance than other vehicles, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we take into account all of that, and it's something that we're iterating, right? So right now we're just looking at the first transactions because it was our first year. So there's some customers returning already, obviously. There's some that buy multiple bikes, some that return their bikes and got new ones. But it's something that we're still iterating and learning from as we grow services that we apply to them.
Right. So the services business here is very interesting because once you capture customers into your ecosystem, there are other things you can upsell them. You said something about servicing earlier. Motorbikes have to be serviced more often. Is that a service that you're going to be looking to provide, that you're going to provide servicing for motorbikes going forward?
Yeah, so most definitely. So we did a very small A/B test, but it's something that we're going to be implementing very soon, as it just makes sense, right? We provide the warranty to the customers, and it's great that we collect all the data points of interaction with any mechanic that has been done throughout that period of time of warranty, and then post-mortems then. Yep.
Now, taking a look at the Southeast Asian market, you know, when any investor or founder or company talks about the Southeast Asian market, there's a lot of potential. There's 600 million people here. It's a big market. But oftentimes we forget that it's multiple countries with multiple regulatory bodies and multiple demographics there, making it quite fragmented and not as seamless as it would seem to an outsider when it comes to growing here in this region. How have you accounted for these challenges in your growth plans? Because you obviously have plans to grow into different markets. No timeline just yet, but you have experience in Vietnam and you have experience in Malaysia. How have you accounted for the different regulatory regimes in other countries?
You know, I think the experience we have of running businesses in different countries come as a great wealth in terms of that potential expansion in the future for all those remaining markets. I think obviously all the companies we worked for before have the multiple footprint across Southeast Asia. And you know, it's just a matter of actually localizing, understanding what are how to navigate each of the markets, getting tied with the right people that can help you navigate those markets, and getting a clear understanding before you even jump into it. But there's definitely a lot of learning that you need to get before you make the first step.
Give us a sense of what you've learned based on just your experience in Malaysia and Vietnam about what you have to account for that maybe you didn't think about when you first started.
So I don't take for granted anything. Mm-hmm. So I don't think definitely I got loads of learnings. You know, culturally, Vietnam and Malaysia are super different. Mm-hmm. And that's by fact. and then the way they operate and all the regulation factors that are to it are also extremely different. So I would say there's a natural constant discovery. And you need to be making sure that you're always looking at finding where to improve at every single step you give, right? Because there's always more to learn as you open new showrooms, licenses that you need. If you it's a little bit of an endless discovery, right? There's no right answer there, I would say.
Have you started research into the other markets and identified potential pain points?
Oh, most definitely.
What are some of the examples of these potential pain points before you expand to, let's say, Indonesia or Philippines?
Okay, let me give you a fairly simple example. So trading motorbikes in Malaysia is fairly simple, right? You go JPJ, you change an ownership name, then you potentially have other partners that provide you with thumbprint machines when you have license to do so and whatnot, and then you can do it in-house and whatnot. In Vietnam, you always need to pass through notary office, for instance. You can't do it in-house, and there's multiple notary office, different paperwork that needs to get done. So just that simple difference makes a whole different operation system in place, right? And that goes on and on. Yeah.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about the path to profitability here. You noted you have 7% margins. Now, those are pretty thin when you compare to other businesses, but maybe not as thin as in the trading or e-commerce business. Based on your models, do you have a path to profitability or at least for a path to free cash flow? And what does that look like?
You know, I think that what is very clear is we're in a huge volume business. We're definitely in a growth position where we're just looking at getting the most amount of bikes traded and expanding our name out there. But definitely getting to the profitability side is not something that it's so far off, in the sense that the margins that we're getting is down to the level of strategy that we have in place today. It's not that we couldn't harvest in a different level. And as you know, all the dealers, or a great majority of dealers of vehicles out there, do pretty well in terms of revenue generation and profitability. So it's not something that is very far off from our own business. It's just the matter of the strategy in place today and where we want to take the business.
Mm. Any rough timeline that you can share with us?
So right now, it is really just down to focus to growth. Okay. So there's no timeline set in stone.
Mm. And I would presume it also depends on how you can generate more services revenue going forward?
Obviously, yes. And obviously, we want to be as close to profitability as possible all the way. Mm-hmm. But guarantee that we don't hinder growth, neither we go too low, right?
Now, Gil, we've got around, I think, 2 minutes or so before we go into the 11am news bulletin. It's been noted in on a few websites, a few articles that you've spoken to, that you're looking at raising Series A funding. Your last round was from September 2021. It was a seed round. What can you tell us about the status of your fundraising and the aims for those funds?
Yeah, so it's basically for the full growth expansion of the business, both Malaysia and Vietnam, guaranteed that we super enlarge our infrastructures, our marketing, our HR, our technology, providing a lot better experience online as well. And then obviously the capability of absorption of motorbikes. So the more we carry in terms of funding, the more able we are to super speed the trade, right?
So yeah. So for context, you've raised around $1.7 million over 6 funding rounds based on Crunchbase data. Are we looking at a sizable funding round in Series A? Comparatively?
We're most definitely looking at a different size of round coming in now.
Now, iMotorbike counts SOSV, The Hive Southeast Asia, 500 Global, Auto Partners as among some of your investors. Will you be looking to them for follow-on funding? Are you looking for new investors out there? And if new investors, what kind of partnerships are you looking for?
So we're always open to bright partners to join us. Naturally, I believe some of our investors will have the interest of coming back in to the round. And we're looking forward for the exciting times ahead.
All right. I'm sure we'll have to pay attention to see what goes on the funding round. But you are currently trying to raise your Series A, correct?
Yeah, we are in the process, indeed.
Now, Gil, let's end with this. While startups have been staying private for longer, you're 6 years in, although the new business is about 3 years in. I'm sure there have been conversations around exit strategies or liquidity events or something or the like. IPOs generally consider the main aim or the holy grail of exits. Is that in line with the thinking of you and your investors, or are you considering other options as palatable as well?
Still very far from that in my thought process, but I would say, you know, it's definitely a possibility. That's as much as I could answer now.
All right, then, Gil, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I've been speaking with Gil Carmo, founder and CEO of e-commerce platform iMotorbike. Up next, the 11 a.m. news bulletin, and then Herb Vantage. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This has been Open for Business. Keep it here at BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.